Blog Talk Radio. Some days life feels perfect, other days it just ain't working. The good, the bad, the right, the wrong, and everything in the...
Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Kings and queens, we have a great special premiere show tonight. We're going to be discussing Black Wall Street. We're going to pull in Brother Andre Curry coming out of California in a minute. I just want to give a few quick details about tonight's show. It's going to be a part one, which of course is tonight, a part two, which is of course tomorrow night. But first, I also want to make people aware that this is the Butterfly Evolution Show with Tammy Gator, and also the Anthony and B-Fly Show with me, myself, Anthony D. Collins. What we're going to do, we're going to try to do a few things. It's most important to get the information out there, because maybe if you do know the information, I can guarantee you it's a lot of people who do not know the information. So we want to make sure that Brother Andre has enough time to get the information out there. So Tammy has a set of questions. Now, we're going to accept questions and comments via inbox on Facebook. So if you're Tammy's friend, you can catch me, Anthony D. Collins, or you can catch Tammy, and then we'll make sure the questions get read or the comments get read. Now, if we get through a lot of the information that Brother Andre wants to share with us tonight, at that point, we will accept some callers at that time. We don't want to get distracted, you know, from some different callers and things of that nature. So, and the way we'll do that, I'll pull one call from my show, and Tammy will pull one call from her show, or vice versa. If we don't have any calls on either show, we just go with the first people that's in line. But this is something special I've done a few years ago as far as sharing information with two networks airing at the same time. It can be done for other BTR hosts. If you need to know how, just inbox me and Tammy. We don't have any problem sharing that information with you. With that being said, I want to give Tammy opportunity to introduce herself, and then we'll bring Brother Andre right on. Tammy?
Okay. Hi, you guys. This is Tammy from the Butterfly Evolution Radio Show, and I just want to thank you all for tuning in with us and be patient as we get through this process. As Anthony said, there's just a lot of information that we want to get out. So get your pen, get your paper, take notes so that tomorrow, if we have more time, then we can get those questions and your comments in as well. So I just want to just thank everybody for tuning in with us tonight, and just get your paper and pen and get ready to learn.
Great, great. So without that being said, on last thing, no commercials, no promoting anybody's work. We're pretty much, this is just a premiere show. We're going to feature Andre Curry and talk about this Black Wall Street event. So with that being said, we're going to introduce and bring in Brother Curry.
Peace, family. Peace.
All right. How you doing, brother? How you doing?
I'm wonderful. Wonderful. Glad to be on the show.
Great.
I appreciate you all opening up the airways to get this information out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, brother, what I want you to do first, and then Tammy going to go right into her set of questions, but I just want you to give a little background about yourself, and then secondly, just simply explain what the Black Wall Street event is all about, because a lot of people really don't know. So just give them a simple explanation with that.
Okay. Well, first, I'm originally, I hail from the territory of Kansas City, Missouri, and right now I'm out in the San Francisco territory, Bay Area, and right now I'm doing a lot of lectures and speaking engagements out here to the community, the kids. That's pretty much who I am at this point and what I'm doing, just basically a person who is trying to uplift the community with this information and put it in the hands, especially of the babies, so that they can bring about to fruition the dreams of the ancestors, restoring us back to, you know, our thrones and so on and so forth. The one thing I want to do before we actually go into the information is make sure that everyone knows that what we're dealing with is called Black Wall Street. That's not what the ancestors who went through this terrorist act or this Holocaust called it themselves. And that becomes important because we're dealing with labels that are being put on us that are not ours specifically. And as we get into the information, there'll be a greater understanding of why that's important, that we realize that we're talking about the territory of Tulsa, Oklahoma, and where our ancestors lived and the Holocaust that they went in, or, excuse me, were victimized with, that was not foreign to us during that time, which we'll go into a little bit also. So this was one of the most prosperous communities inside of, on the continent at that point. I think when we hear about it, we generally hear about this area, and they say it was one of the most prosperous black neighborhoods. But that's actually kind of minimizing the greatness of what was going on there. It was one of the most prosperous places on the continent at that point. And in America, it was one of the most prosperous. So our ancestors were doing a lot of things that we can take and grab the baton from them and learn from right now.
Absolutely, absolutely. Tammy?
I have a question before we get started. What's the era, the time frame for, because I'm very new to it myself, like baby, had not heard of it prior to a conversation or actually a show that, and I can't think of his name, I wish I could, that did one on the Black Wall Street. So what's the time, like the year, I guess, from beginning to end, that it was up and going?
That's a great question. The beginning date, I'm not sure of whether I can actually put a time stamp on that, and when we get into the information, you'll see why. But the end date is actually the era that we call the quote-unquote civil rights era. That's when it actually came to an end.
Okay.
And that'll be explained as we go on.
Okay. For those who have not heard about the Black Wall Street, so that as you go through it, is there anything you can kind of share, just pre-share with them to help them understand? Some people here are saying Black Wall Street and really may not know what we're talking about.
Well, Black Wall Street was a name that was coined and given to the Tulsa, Oklahoma area that we inhabited and during this time period that we're going to be covering, basically it's just not even a time period, it's actually a day of 1921. May 31st to June 1st, 1921 is the day that we'll be dealing with tonight. But the area was a hugely prosperous area. Based on the laws of segregation, our ancestors had to live amongst each other and completely do for themselves. So there was no outside interference or help coming in based on the laws, and that put them in a situation where we were totally dependent upon each other. And so we had many businesses. We educated our own children. We had our own banks, hospitals, churches, insurance companies, tailors, bakeries, grocery stores. We had gardens, and I shouldn't say gardens. I mean, we had fields for growing food. So that's the background of it, and that's why it's called. But the reason they call it Wall Street is because of the prosperity that we're dealing with. It was a certain kind of prosperity that was only supposed to be known, or I should say, I guess it's something that they would say that quote-unquote Anglo-Saxons or something that they are accustomed to. They term it in a way it's almost as like we're not accustomed to that type of prosperity. So they give it a special name to set it aside. But as we go into the discussion, we'll actually see that there were many of these places around the globe.
Absolutely. My brother, I mean, just a little simple research about as if it's true or not, but they were so powerful at some point when we talk about this, that wasn't they about to start trading internationally, kind of like what the New York Stock Exchange do today?
That's a great question. there wouldn't have been what we call now, quote unquote, stock exchange as we know it, because those things weren't, it wouldn't have been a quote unquote stock exchange as we know it today. But what you're inferring and referring to is international business. Am I correct on that? Yeah, they were on the way to doing international business with all different types of countries, because France was a country that was stepping up. And, of course, we were going to do business with our brothers and sisters on the continent of what we call Africa today. But you had a lot of countries actually stepping up to do business with them, simply because a lot of countries feel guilt. A lot of Anglo-Saxon countries feel the guilt coming out of the times of slavery. So there was a lot of countries who wanted to be able to reach their hand out, you know, and say, hey, we're willing to do business and correspond with you and so on and so forth. So, yeah, they were on their way to doing things, you know, in a way that the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey had described to us to do in the first place.
Right. Now, and quickly to add to that, is that one of the reasons? I know it's maybe something more, but is that one of the reasons that caused the bombing? And I know people are probably going to ask what they mean by the bombing, but I'm sure we're going to talk about that later. Because just from some of the things that I studied, it said that was one of the major reasons why the government and the police there tried to bomb that community, because that would have put them on a whole nother level as far as power and money.
Well, I can't say yay or nay to that particular fact. What I can say is that the prosperity that we were dealing with was something that was so great that it caused a lot of jealousy from Anglo-Saxons in the area. And one of the things that what was interesting about the research when I started really getting into it is that a lot of the Anglo-Saxon women were extremely jealous of the way that our queens were being treated.
Absolutely.
Us.
No doubt.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going, when we start getting into the information, it's so interesting how that jealousy played out in the things that they did to spite our queens. But just to throw a little trinket out there, we were so prosperous that our banks in Tulsa were loaning money to the Anglo-Saxons who were trying to get into the oil business, or whose businesses were collapsing. Their banks could not afford to accommodate them, so they would come over into our area and actually borrow money from our banks. I mean, this is how our ancestors were getting down.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt. No doubt. Tammy?
I'm here. I want to hear how the queens were treated.
Oh my God! we gonna need a 3-hour show. Well, no, basically from our
let's just make that about the so we get back to that era, because if we get there, everything will be back to normal, back to the right way.
Let's hear the rest of the information and get to the real point here.
Yeah, let's just talk about how that we get things back in order.
Indeed.
I guess if we could just go ahead and start, tell us about the people that lived in the area and I guess what areas did they come from? How did they come together?
Okay.
How did they come together and where did they come from?
Well, we're going to do a little walk through history on that one to entertain that question. Because what I found is that no one is really kind of getting into where these people came from. You know, when we hear people talking about Black Wall Street, as it's called, we just hear about this prosperous community, and it's almost spoke of like it just popped up, you know, like they just came out of nowhere and was just this great prosperous place, but that's just not the case. So we're going to start the trek through history with the Trail of Tears.
Okay.
And that becomes important because with the Trail of Tears, with all that went on with that, you had a pushing of the so-called Indian. And before I move forward, let me deal with the word Indian, because as Tammy knows, I'm very extreme when it comes to us speaking things correctly. And so our people, when we're doing these discussions, need to know what they're saying when they're saying it. So as a side note here, if anyone is writing, write down a couple of things about the word Indian so that we can understand when we say Indian what we're saying and actually what the misnomer is. So the word Indian was placed upon the people when Christopher Colon, or who we call Christopher Columbus, got lost at sea and landed in central Al-Marak, or what we term today as America. He thought that he was in Hindustan. Modern day, we call that India. Because he thought he was there, and the people that he seen looked like what you, if you research the Dravidians of India, you'll see a clear depiction of what the Dravidians looked like and still look like today, and what the people on this continent look like. So because he's seen the same people, same customs, same way of life, he called the people Indian because he thought he was in India modernly. That becomes important as we get into a couple of other notes about who these people were, and that we say were in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So when he got here, he seen that, and so remember, these people were called Indians that he sees. Now back to the Trail of Tears. When we get to the Trail of Tears, we see that coming out of the Georgia Territory, the Missouri Territory, some of the Kansas Territory, some of the Florida Territories, and a few other territories on the continent, the so-called Indians were pushed into Tulsa. And this is going to take place around the early 1800s. And when you start looking into that, you'll see that there was many, many tribes, whether you have Cherokee, Pawnee, Choctaw, Chickasaw, Seminole, Wichita, Washita, which is same thing as Wichita, Muscogee, Creek, and so on and so forth, were all pushed in to the territory known as Oklahoma. Now, at this point, Oklahoma is considered sovereign. What sovereign means is that it is not a part of the United States colonies. It is its own country. As we know it today, it would be considered its own country. It was not a part of the Union. So everyone and everything in Oklahoma was owned by the tribes there. Okay, so they had their own government, constitution, bylaws, so on and so forth. Okay, now once the people got there, you started having a lot of Anglo-Saxons coming in and invading and doing terrorist acts on the so-called Indians because they realized that Oklahoma has some of the most fertile land on this continent. It has some of the richest oil reserves. And during this time, we're dealing with, you know, the Industrial Revolution and so on and so forth going on in this country. So you had Anglo-Saxons basically going all around trying to get land no matter how they had to get it, okay? And so because Oklahoma was sovereign, they could not get in there. So they began, again, to do terrorist acts on the so-called Indians in there. So around the 1860s, the government the United States government institutes what's called the Dalles Row. Now, what that Dalles Row was supposed to be a treaty that was given to the so-called Indians from the Anglo-Saxons that would relieve the so-called Indians of that land in exchange for other accommodations. Some of those accommodations included you had to give up your status as an Indian. Okay? Now that becomes very, very important. So once you signed the Dalles Row, you no longer was able to call yourself an Indian. You gave up your status as an Indian. One of the other trades was that you had to dress more civilized, as they say it, which meant that you had to start dressing more like an Anglo-Saxon. You had to give up hunting as your way of life and get into husbandry, or what we today call farming. You had to send your children to schools where they would be educated by Anglo-Saxons. You had to learn the King's English. And then one of the biggest atrocities of this whole Dalles Row thing is that every man who was the head of a household was given 165 acres of land. Now, that 165 acres of land was then put into what's called a land trust. When it was put into that land trust, it was for 25 years. And after that 25 years, then you had to start paying taxes on the land. Now, what they did to disguise what was really going on is that they said that, oh, we're going to develop this 25-year trust so that no one swindles you out of your land until we can basically educate you and your family for 25 years, and then we'll come in, and then if you want to sell. And then, you know, there was other laws that actually abridged that eventually. But that was one of the laws that was a part of the Dalles Row. One of the other, you know, atrocities with the Dalles Row is that once the so-called Indian was getting the land, you had a lot of Anglo-Saxons who were jealous of the fact that the so-called Indians were getting this land. And so what they would do is that they would go to the county clerk or the recorder's office and ask to be a part of the Dalles Row. Of course, they weren't the originals or aboriginals of this continent, so the clerk, you know, let's just say, would say, well, you're not an Indian. So they would say, well, I'll give you $5 if you'll write me on the Dalles Row. And then that became what we now call the $5 Indian, who really has no tie to this continent by ancestry, but bought into the official document that says that you do have ties. And so today, mm-hmm. you'll see a lot of Anglo-Saxons running around talking about, I'm Indian, I'm native, I was one of the first people here, my ancestors went through this, they went through that. And when you chase their genealogy, these people are from Europe, France, Scandinavia, so on and so forth. And it was because one of their ancestors bought onto that. Okay, so...
Go ahead, brother, go ahead.
Oh, well, we can take a pause. What was you going to say there?
No, I just want for people to be able to keep up if some are not able to, just in case. Can you give them the reason why they did that as far as the benefits that they was getting because of that? Because, you know, I understand where you're going with it and why they was doing it. Tell them how important and how significant it is. What benefits did it give a European to say he was an Indian, and what benefits did he receive from the government just by simply paying the $5?
Great question, because that goes into two different things. So once the Albion or Anglo-Saxon was able to say that he's an Indian, he was actually able to get the same land and same land rights that the so-called Indian got. So he automatically got acreage, prime acreage, and it became inheritable through his family line. So once mm-hmm. you got it, if you're competent and you know how to symbology, which is the art of writing contracts, you can contract that and never and contract that to your family as an inheritance, and your family never would have to get off of that land. So that becomes very mm-hmm. significant when we start looking at, you know, a lot of the corporations that we see today, because this is how a lot of them made their wealth, not so much all of them through the Dalles Row, but through the free labor that came off of our ancestors' backs in certain cases. And so because of that, these families would inherit these things that they never should have been privy to in the first place. And
absolutely.
What it becomes interesting about, the most interesting thing when you look at the Dalles Row was the fact that you no longer could say that you were Indian. And that becomes extremely important based on the Constitution. Because the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution says that, quote-unquote, Indians and all others, three-fifths of a man, are not taxable. So in law, you are what you say you are. So when you walk into the courtroom or anywhere and you say, I'm Italian, I'm black, Negro, colored, African American, or whatever else, you say I'm Chinese, I'm Japanese, you are that. Those brands, black, Negro, colored, and African American, is what makes you taxable. So by the Indian, the so-called Indian, being willing to not call himself an Indian anymore, it automatically makes him taxable, which is also when you look at old census reports, why you'll see mulatto and color or black, well, you won't see color, but you'll see black in the old censuses, because those were terms, those were brands that was placed upon us to make us taxable in a lot of cases, because we were not able to be taxed based on the Constitution. And those things are still in law today if our people could wake up and stop calling themselves black, Negro, colored, and African American. You could put yourself back into a fold of nationhood if you just go back to respecting your ancient foremothers and forefathers. But as long as you keep that slave brand, black, Negro, colored, Indian, African American, then you become taxable by law because you are what you say you are.
Absolutely. Tammy, go ahead. Go along to your questions. I got one, but go ahead.
I have a question about buying the property for the $5, and you might have went over this, but I'm a bit confused about what – I heard the benefits it has to them as far as the land and being able to contract that to their families. What other – I guess I'm confused about asking one set of people, we'll give you this land, but you can no longer call yourself what you really are, but then allowing someone to come in with $5 and buy into that. Does that mean that they now take on much of those things, much of the rights that those other people gave up?
Well, what happens is that when you go on the Dalles Row today is used as the marker of who is a Native American. That's the marker that they use in a lot of cases is the Dalles Row. Now, understand that with that Dalles Row, when the United States forms an agreement or a treaty with the so-called people who call themselves Native Americans today, is based off of the Dalles Row a lot of times. So what happens is that they will say that if you're not on the Dalles Row, you're not a Native. And the reason that becomes important is because, remember, we see so-called Indian casinos and businesses popping up, and they're getting thousands of acres of land because they're attached to this Dalles Row and so-called Indians. When the Albion or the Anglo-Saxon bought into that, he also bought into those rights. So that's why his family... You'll see a person like, I think, is it Willie Nelson, who owns a casino right outside of San Diego, he's no more Indian than I'm Portuguese. But his family possibly bought onto this Dalles role, and that gives him the contractual rights to those treaty and engagement that come together with the so-called Native Americans in the United States. Did I explain that? You understand the significance of why that was important from an inheritable standpoint?
Right.
Okay. Right. I think so.
Okay. This is just basically based off my opinion and just from the research that I've found, but I want to talk about integration and segregation and the profound effect that it really had, you know, on our culture. Because I really feel, this is just my opinion again, that when the Black Wall Street, what we call it, was going on, we was okay. We was wealthy. We was owning businesses. We was keeping everything in-house. We was getting married. We was doing all the things that was seen to be within our, you know, true design. But then once integration came a way of life through the bombing or just the law change or whatever, then that's when everything seemed to just get lost. We started losing land, or land was stolen from us, and then unions was created to prevent us from getting jobs because actually we had all the skills. So whether you agree or not with that, what do you feel about integration and segregation? Does that have a profound effect on us today or not?
Well, it's interesting because this is a conversation that me and my father have had some years ago, and every now and then we've had it, and we were on opposite sides of the fence.
Okay.
Civil rights is one of the worst things that's ever happened to us.
Absolutely.
Statistically, it is one of the worst things that's ever happened to us. And that's not even debatable when you just look at statistics.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to jump to the end of the Black Wall Street thing and go into the end information here because of that question. But up until the so-called Civil Rights era, we owned millions of acres of land on this continent.
Mm-hmm.
Based on laws of segregation, it put us in a situation where we had to be completely dependent on each other. So you have places like Tulsa, Oklahoma. You have St. Louis, Missouri, Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina, and numerous other places that were extremely prosperous and rivaled any other place in this on this continent. I don't want to leave out, you know, my San Francisco area up here, but we have these pockets that were doing extremely well. One of the biggest problems with our people is that we're always trying to sing kumbaya with everyone, and everyone's not trying to sing kumbaya with you. So
Absolutely. You
are willing to go and do business with everyone because we practice a certain type of humanity. But these same people are not ingratiating themselves to do business with you. You don't see that same type of humanity given back, and this is our problem. See, we were willing to give up our grandmother's cooking and our neighbor down the street making our soups because we wanted to walk over here to Anglo-Saxon land and spend money over there. It wasn't good enough that our children went to schools and were educated by people who looked just like them. We needed our children to be able to go be educated just like the quote-unquote white people. And this was our mindset. So when that happened, we didn't understand that the Europeans have think tanks. And in those think tanks, they practice our ancient sciences. And I won't go into that.
Yeah.
But out of those think tanks, you get strategy. And so generally, they're always about 5 to 10 steps ahead of us because of that. So while you're fighting for civil rights, they're figuring out a way to take that fight and make it prosperous for them. So cool, mm-hmm. we're going to let you come to our schools, we're going to let you go to our universities, we're going to let, and when we do that, we're going to educate you and give you a fine European education, and also what comes with that is a European mindset. Now, I'm not saying that going to college and getting your education is bad. Don't, you know, for the audience, don't misinterpret what I just said. What I said is that based on strategy, you know, we failed. And they mm-hmm. had their strategy worked out. So when they let you integrate, all your business is closed down because you no longer spent and circulated your dollar in your community. You went over there to everybody who did not look like you, who were forced to do business with you and made them wealthy and made your own people poor.
Mm-hmm.
That's just what happened. And that's not based on opinion. That's just based on facts. We don't own anything worth noting much today. We have a few businesses that we could throw out there. Oh, well, we have this trucking company, or we have this. We had over 20 million acres of land, and unless you can show me that we have that, it's not debatable. Our high school dropout rate for men is at almost about 53% to 55%. That wouldn't have been okay in the 60s, 50s, 40s, 30s, 20s. We practiced a different, we had a different mind frame about our communities. So I agree with you.
Okay. And real quick, I just got a quick comment. Then, Tam, you can go with your next question because, like, when I did my research on it, I just simply did thought of ways to kind of further it. And I went and asked my grandparents. I asked my grandparents, you know, how was it? Do you remember communities like this that was prospering like that? And it was funny because my grandma just pulled out the photo album, and she showed me photos of really how they was getting down. To me, they was living a great life. You know, she showed me what they owned, how they owned it, what they did, how they did it. And then I asked her, I said, so, Grandma, in your opinion, what's up with segregation and integration? It was one of the worst things we ever did, or one of the worst things we was forced to do. And that came out of my grandmother's mouth. So I just kind of, and this is what I would encourage other people to do. If you're fortunate enough to have someone that was around and that asked them, you know, bring it up about Black Wall Street, were there any communities that they can remember that were actually living that way? And you will find that the answer is yes, because my grandmother showed me pictures. She showed me, you know, the fancy cars, the everything, you know, how they stayed together. She has so many stories. It actually made her day that I brought the conversation up because it was like she just got so jittery just thinking about those times. So that's what I encourage, mm-hmm. you know, our listeners to do. Go ahead, Tammy.
I just want to piggyback on, before I ask the question, on what you're saying and think about where we are today and how separated we are. In everything we do, and where has it gotten us? Where has it gotten our children, and where will our children be? Think about where we are now, and if we continue this way, what will our children have? And look, I can even say 5 to 10 years. Forget about 50. Where will they be? What will they have? So I just want to reiterate that as we continue to go through this so that people can see, stay on with us and see the importance of this. And in making sure that your children are around when you ask these questions, when you sit down and have these conversations. In fact, your children should be on the call with you tonight. And then you go back and talk with mm-hmm. them or get them in front of someone that can really answer some questions for them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then just a quick reminder, for anybody who has a question or has a comment, just inbox me or Tammy and we'll copy and paste the question to each other and ask. We're not really trying to take any calls at this time. Please bear with us because the most important thing is the information. Although you may know the information, what I'm finding, it's a great percentage of us that don't know the information. So if it's a specific question that you do want answered, just inbox us on Facebook and we'll ask Brother Andre. Well, go ahead, Tammy, what's your next question?
I guess as far as the resources and things like that, how were they able to gather the resources and start the community?
Okay. Now let's go back and pick up where we left off because that answers that question right there. So remember what I said that with the Dalles rope, you was able to get at that point, if you're a male head of the household, it was about 165 acres. And then there was other breakdowns if you were a mother or if you wasn't a head of a household, but she was a single man, or so on and so forth. So remember, this is the 1860s all the way up to the 1890s as this was going on. So what you had, and I want to be real clear and real sharp with the words that I'm using, because I want everyone who's listening to understand and be really clear about this point. When those so-called Indians signed the Dalles Roe, they gave up their name Indian, Cherokee, Pawnee, so on and so forth. They became today what you call the blacks, the Negroes, and the coloreds. I'm going to say that again, because we tend to say I'm mixed with something. When you're not mixed with anything, you are the original. And we got to get that vocabulary out. When the so-called Indian, Cherokee, Pawnee, Washita, Chickasaw, Choctaw, signed to Dalles Roe, they gave up being called Indians and became blacks, Negroes, and colors. They got those brands. The way that we accumulated, because Tulsa, Oklahoma has 65,000 acres of land total. That's 4 square miles, half the size of San Francisco. The way that was accumulated was in much of the part from that Dalles Roe, because you had a composite of these people who got that land once they signed the Dalles Roe and stayed there and had to give up their normal, natural ways of life and adopted other ways of life and excelled at that. So what you have is from the 1880s and 90s all the way through the 20s, you had a building of infrastructure going on in Tulsa with these people who used to call themselves Choctaw, Wichita, Pawnee, Cherokee, Seminole, so on and so forth. Again, these people became black, Negroes, and coloreds. That's significant, and we have to understand that. So I may say that 2 or 3 more times, because we have to stop saying I'm mixed. We have to start using, start using the correct terms, because that, remember, once you said that you are not aboriginal, Hitachinas, or Indian, you became taxable. The land became taxable, and it really didn't make sense to give up land that you were sovereign on and then pay taxes on it 25 years later when you had it free and clear before that. So
I have a quick question, if you don't mind me jumping in here for a minute, just to make sure.
Do.
So you're saying that the people who were given the land, I'm just going to use people for now, given the land and had to give up, had to disown their identity to get the land, and then fast forward 25 years later, because now you're taxable, and I'm guessing you may have said this, you owe something, taxes on this in 25 years, but if you don't have it, then the land goes somewhere. Is that right?
Or exactly. You lose it.
Okay.
25 years later, if you can't start paying the taxes, you lose the land. You eventually lose the land.
Okay, now at that
years
point,
earlier, say that one more. Say it again, Andy.
No, I was just saying at that point, right there, when they lose the land, what happens to the land? I'm just curious. That's just a question that came to my mind.
That goes back to the state. It's the same thing that if you own a home today, and you don't pay your taxes, it gets auctioned out.
Right. Okay. Same process. Okay.
Right. And so became significant. But that's how we accumulated the land. We never went anywhere.
Okay.
And so we just had a switching of identity. So you can look at some of the records, and you'll see where, when a lot of these treaties were signed, you'll see names like one of the brothers or sisters' names may be Anawaiho Hui, and he'll become Charles Williams. You have someone named Dinagi Wai, and he'll become James Travis. I mean, and you can see it on the records. It was the most that was the most fascinating thing that I've seen. I couldn't help but chuckle because I'm like, it was interesting how systematic it was and how we were so, even back then, we were so far behind the eight ball with it because we didn't understand, because we didn't operate that way. They operated in a way that was deceitful. We didn't.
Right.
And so we didn't understand the slipping of the cards.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Wow. Very interesting. I got a question that just came up to me. When we constantly say the word minority or versus majority, and it's always been pitched to us, our community, our culture, that we're the minority. Would you talk about that for a minute in reference to what it deals with when you think about the Black Wall Street and how we never really was the minority to begin with, but we've been believed to think we are?
Well, the moment you said that, you know, I have to go to my dictionary so that we can be in fact. And let me see if I can find it here. I'm in the Black's Law Dictionary. It's not written by quote unquote black people. Here it is. It's just that's the name of the dictionary. So the word minority. Now, before I read that definition, I want to be clear to the audience that you have different languages that operate on this continent. The fact that you may not understand them is not relevant to whether they operate or not. It's just like when you go to the doctor and the doctor starts speaking in their language, what you say is, say it to me in English, because you don't speak that one. That's a whole different language. Well, law is written based off of Latin. And the words come out of what you call Moorish Latin, which now you call Spanish. But when you walk into a courtroom or you walk and you fill out certain papers, what you say you are, remember, that becomes important. What you say is what you are. So the word minority in Black Law Dictionary, 4th edition, says the state or condition of a minor infancy.
Mm-hmm.
Minority. The state or condition of a minor infancy. So we call ourselves a lot of things, and that's why the law doesn't apply to us. When you look at the word minor or minority, it just simply means the state of infancy. And if you just rationalize your way through it, then you understand that when you are a minor, then you need adult permission to do a lot of things. That's called wardship. That's a wardship status. Meaning, and this is where you see children are called wards of the state because they are considered the mentality of a minor. So minority is not a race. It's a mindset. Mm-hmm. It's a state of status in law. So when you say I'm a minor, when you say I'm a minority, what you say is that I have the intellect of a child, and my capacity is that of a child. So they must treat you accordingly. So when you say that's what you are, they must treat you in that fashion. They have to, by law, they must treat you as a person who has the competency of a child. And so when we say that today in our communities, whether we're saying the word black, and if you're looking at the word black in the law dictionary, if you look in Black's Law Dictionary 3rd edition, it'll tell you the word black means fictitious, not unapparent, fake, and civilitur mortuus. And the word civilitur mortuus means civilly dead or dead in the eyes of the law, which means law does not apply to you.
Absolutely.
And so those words become reality for you because that's what you said. So once our brothers in Tulsa started to take on those brands, they lost their sovereign status and began to have no recompense when things would happen to them, because what we're about to discuss did not just happen there. It happened all over the globe. You had the massacre of St. Louis. You had all types of things that were going on. This riot that we're about to discuss was the biggest one, but by no means was it one of the only ones. The year period from 1918 to 1921 was one of the bloodiest time periods with massacres happening to us. Just almost on a daily basis, you've seen these riots, and whether you were in the North where there was a lot of riots, what you want to call race riots, they wasn't race riots. They were Anglo-Saxon afflicting terrorist acts upon our community, or whether you was down south and dealt with the terrorist acts of lynching and hanging. Either way, you were dealing with it.
Right. Now, I should have, maybe tomorrow I might have the name of this documentary, but I've seen this documentary where it's talking about down south, and I think primarily Alabama, where at certain, I think around the same time frame, but don't quote me on that, I have to go back to my notes and stuff, but it was kind of a time where, blacks had a certain amount of land, acres, you know, a lot of land, but they gave the blacks either option. They was like, either sell us the land or we don't take the land. And, of course, being, you know, who we are, you know, the strength and physical strength that we had, a lot of us said, well, you know, we're going to have to try to take the land. And that's what they end up doing. So this documentary was put in place to try to trace back some of the ancestors and some of the people of their family today to try to go back and give them an opportunity to repurchase the land at a very, very low fee. But, of course, it's hard to get the paperwork, the deeds, and stuff like that. So I'm just kind of correlating what you're saying as far as this wasn't just going on in Oklahoma. This was kind of going on across the globe, at least within the United States anyway.
Right, and that's true. Truth be told, we could all go back and get this land, and I'm going to get into that in the second hour, you know, when we're talking about what we can do to rebuild these structures. But those people don't need to purchase it for $1. Truthfully, all you need to ask for is the allodial title, and no government can show you the allodial title, because the Moors are the only ones who can show allodial titles. Well, we're the Moors. There's any break in receipts, showing sales receipts, transfers, if there's any break in those where you cannot show a proper sale of any land, then it reverts back to that owner. So if you have a tract of land that you think would have been in your family, and you know that the Knights of Columbus, or who you call the KKK, came and took that land by force, you don't have to pay for it. You go back to that same time period. You ask for the allodial title, and you ask for a receipt. If there's no receipt, then it goes back to you. That's law, but we have to know that type of law. And most of us are going, once you hire a lawyer is not going to do that, because their allegiance is not to you. Their allegiance is to the court first, and the families of Europe. Families of Rome. That's their allegiance.
Right.
Their allegiance is not to you. So that's part of the trek we have to work with. But there are some different laws that I'm going to go over, that deal with this very subject that are already in place that most of us don't even know about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. All right, Tammy, go ahead with the next question, because my mind running right now. I'm going to have some more subtle questions in a minute. Go ahead with another next question.
Mine, too.
Indeed.
It just makes you go so much further, and you'll get off track if you're not careful. I don't know if you would like to answer this question. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, Tammy. I'm sorry. I apologize, because I want to slow down just a second to make people aware of what Brother Andre said and what I mentioned earlier about how we're going to show you. And I researched this myself, that if you feel your family has owned a certain piece of land, and if you do the proper research and investigation, that you can get that land back. And that's really important for us to understand or understand whatever you want to say, because that's significant on how we can build back our community, because it takes land. A lot of people get conceived and think that it takes money. It doesn't. Money is an illusion. Money is an attitude. It takes land. Land is something that never, ever goes away, and you can give it to generations of generations. That's why you see so many other cultures buy that big house with about 20 rooms, and that particular house stays in that family for centuries. So we have to understand that part, and I just want to really point that out before we go on. But go ahead, Tammy. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, I don't know if Andre wants to go into the laws that are in place now. My next question was going to be on the riots that took place.
Let's deal with the riots first, because that's going to bring us back home to that question anyway.
Okay.
So on May 31st, 1921, a young brother walks into a elevator in what we now know as Tulsa, Oklahoma. The story goes that as he walked into the elevator, he tripped. When he tripped, there was an Anglo-Saxon girl in the elevator who was working the elevator, because at this time you had elevator attendants. When he tripped, he bumped into her, as the story goes, and she screamed, "Rape." Now, what happened is that because she screamed, "Rape," and remember, at this point in time, there was laws in place to protect Anglo-Saxons from our men, which was just a complete falsehood, because it was truly the Anglo-Saxon woman who was always chasing our men. But that's another subject. I just want to be clear on that, that the law they're going to say was to protect them from us. The truth is, our men have always needed protection from them in that way. And the law came about because the Anglo-Saxon man was intimidated by the Moor, the Asiatic man, and his woman constantly chasing the Asiatic man. So they had to bring about codes, not laws, they had to bring about codes to enforce these things. And some of those codes you hear would be called reckless eyeballing codes and so on and so forth, where if you were caught looking at an Anglo-Saxon woman, then you could be in prison, and so on and so forth. So anyway, so that was the significance of her screaming rape. So once that started, the sheriff comes and takes the young brother to the jail. Word gets around by the Tulsa, I forget the name of the paper, but if you know it, Anthony and Tammy, I can throw it out there. But they have an article, and I actually finally found an article, and I was trying to find it again, and I couldn't. But they had printed an article that said, "Negro rapes white woman." And they printed this article the exact same day this happened. That article circulates around the communities that surround Tulsa that are all Anglo-Saxon. The Anglo-Saxon men come together, surround the church. When they surround the church, when they surround the jail, not the church, when they surround the jail, word gets into our community that one of our young brothers is being held there, and there's an angry, quote-unquote, white mob outside asking for the sheriff to turn him over so that they can hang him. So our brothers go down there and they tell the sheriff that, "Look, we're not coming down here to start any trouble. We just want to help protect the jail because we want to make sure that our brother gets a fair trial." So what happens is when the brothers showed up, the Anglo-Saxons seen the number of brothers that came, and so they all went to go get guns. They left, came back with guns. The sheriff tells the Asiatics that came up there, "Look, I don't need you. Everything is good. I'll make sure that he's okay, blase, blase." And the brother's like, "No, we're not leaving." He finally convinces them to leave. They leave, and then as they're going out, they see then it's more and more Anglo-Saxons coming with their shotguns, rifles, and pistols. So now a lot of the brothers in Tulsa were war veterans. And so they were fully armed and had their own arsenals also. So they went home. They all got their rounded up more Asiatic brothers and went back up to the jail, all fully armed at this point. They march up to the jail and tell the sheriff, this time we're not leaving until tomorrow when he would get his trial. So the sheriff is trying to calm the crowd or, you know, whatever. And one of the brothers, some of them were going outside, and they walked past a Anglo-Saxon with a rifle. And the Anglo-Saxon, as the story goes, says to the brother, what are you doing with that rifle, nigga? Or nigger. And the brother says, I'm going to use it if I have to. That kicks off the riot. That incident right there is what kicked off the whole riot that starts at that point. Now, is there any questions or anything about that before we move on to some of the particulars of what was happening during this riot?
No, I don't have anything right now. Tammy, you have anything?
I don't.
Okay. So when this riot, I shouldn't say when this riot, when this terrorist act started.
Mm-hmm.
The brothers are war veterans, and it was a huge intimidation for the Anglo-Saxons that the brothers were veterans because they knew that these brothers would know war tactics, and you can read about that and so on and so forth in certain documents. But when people tell the story of the massacre that happened down there, they usually tell it from the angle where the Asiatic community down there was just massacred and just, all this stuff happened. But what they're leaving out is that right from the jump, the brothers was winning. Fully winning this whole battle. They were fully armed and was pushing the Anglo-Saxons out. And you had quite a few Anglo-Saxon casualties at this point and a lot less casualties on our side because we knew strategy and we had been militarized mentally also.
Mm-hmm.
To abridge that is what we need to study what happened. Because this becomes very important for modern day. What happened is that the Sharif at this point, because they were losing, he deputizes all Anglo-Saxon men, gives the Anglo-Saxon men at this the power at this point to walk up to any Asiatic male or female and arrest them and get them off the streets. Why that was important is because you had a lot of brothers. This is all one day, so this is not like days. So we have to stay on point that we're just talking about June 1st here. One day, just a matter of hours. So everyone hadn't, left and came back home. So you have people who would be coming back home, traveling and getting arrested before they could join in the campaign to defend the community. And so these people were getting arrested. You had the Sharif deputizing everyone. And by deputizing them, he gave them authority to act within the codes or the laws at that time without repercussions later.
Right, absolutely.
And so what happens is that they actually opened up concentration camps in Tulsa to house the men. When they took the brothers off the street, they put them in concentration camps, and you can find some pictures on there if you really do a lot of research online. You'll see that there will be lines of brothers where they usher them into these concentration camps to hold them. This is where it gets interesting, is because at this point what they do, once they get the men housed, there's this one story where they talk about the fact that one Anglo-Saxon went up to a tall hill and set right above our part of the Tulsa and just took a machine gun and just opened fire shooting down into the neighborhood. literally just open fire into the streets of the neighborhood, into the houses. So you got him spraying bullets all around the city as far as, you know, he could anyway. I mean, just aimlessly, just shooting anything, anyone, doesn't matter. And also, right around this point, someone, and you get a lot of confusion around this story of how this happened, but there was military planes that had been converted to crop dusters. Someone with authorization of the Sharif took one of those planes and put a carcinogenic in it, which just means something that could blow up, some sort of bomb, some types, and flew the plane over the neighborhood and dropped bombs into the neighborhood. So this becomes the only bombing inside the United States instituted by an agency inside the United States outside of the one that happened in Philly back in the 80s. Because people forget about that one, but the brothers of MOVE were bombed also. So we've got two, Tulsa and Philly.
Okay.
Tulsa was the first one. And when they did that, they wiped out people for blocks in the community. Once they had the men locked up and had shot up a lot of the people, what the Anglo-Saxon men did is they went back home and they got their women. They took their women down inside the community. When they took them down there, they allowed the women to go house to house looting the homes, taking our queens' jewelries, furs. Our women have marble in their homes. We were talking about a time where our women lacked nothing. And I'm not saying there wasn't disagreement, but what I'm saying is that our women were well taken care of to where they're supposed to be, and that jealousy showed its face during this ride, because you had women who would go there, and there was one comment that was written in one of the write-ups where an Anglo-Saxon woman walks into the house of one of our queens after they had shot it up, and she picks up one of the jewelry boxes and finds his diamonds and gold, and the quote says that she says, "These bitches are down here living better than us." That was the quote. And that was what, that's how they looked at that. And so after that happened, you'll hear stories of how a lot of the brothers and sisters after that bombing had to flee. One of the brothers who was a survivor tells the story of how him and his sister and his mom was in a home, and all of a sudden they heard someone coming in, and they hid under the bed. And his fingers was out a little bit. And when an Anglo-Saxon came in, they came into his room and stepped on his fingers. And he almost screamed. And his sister grabbed his mouth real quick so the sound wouldn't come out. And that was what saved their life.
Wow.
Because they were going into the home killing anybody. You had one story that was just horrible. I mean, it almost brought me to tears, where one sister was just newly gave birth, and I don't think the umbilical cord was fully cut or something, and she had to take the baby and flee. Well, the baby couldn't survive, so someone had to cut the umbilical cord and leave the baby there on the ground. And, I mean, they say, well, it was only 300. There was thousands of people who were massacred on this.
Right.
At this place. Right. They're going to drop the numbers so that we don't know. But the records,
and
family show thousands.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. Wow. Tammy, just go ahead with the rest of the question, because we want to make sure we get as much information out. And then I want you guys to just be mindful, Brother Andre and Tammy, tomorrow, like maybe the last 20-minute marks of the show tomorrow, I want to talk about solutions. I want to talk about what we need to do to try to
make a new Oklahoma across the globe, you know, and that's what I'm trying to preach and talk about as I do these traveling workshops and things of that nature. So I just want us to keep mindful about that. But, Tammy, go ahead with the, your next question.
Well, that's actually one of the ones, so we'll just kind of save that tomorrow. So we want to invite everybody and encourage you to come back and talk with us, discuss, you know, be prepared to get in the chat. So follow us, either Anthony or myself, Butterfly Revolution, or Anthony B. Fly and B. Fly Radio Show. Follow us so that you can get in the chat line tomorrow and send us your questions, comments. So that's one of the questions, so we'll save that for tomorrow. I guess my next question is, did they ever rebuild the community? And if so, I guess when?
Well, what they did, it took about 10 years, and they had the community fully rebuild, actually.
Wow.
And, again, as we discussed a little bit earlier, that community lasted up until the Civil Rights era, literally. And but yeah, they definitely rebuilt it shortly after, and it took 10 years, and it prospered up until around between 1964 and 1967, and then due to desegregation laws and us wanting to sing Kumbaya with everybody, it went under.
Okay.
Wow. Well, go ahead, Tammy. I don't have anything. You know, we got a good 50 minutes.
Anything from the riots? Because, again, I don't remember ever. If I did, I don't remember. But I don't remember hearing about this in school or even talked about. So what became of the bombing? Were there any reparations from the riots?
Well, here recently, some of the brothers and the sisters are survivors. Now, pay attention to how this goes, because this was interesting, and I'll tell you why after I tell the story of what they did. So some of the survivors, okay, who, again, these survivors would be about 90, 80 to 90 years old, 70 around there. You know, you could have been a child and 20, you know, so you would be about 70, 80 years old at this point. And some of them were given reparations. Some of them were given like 9 people out of the 20 or 19 or 20 that are currently living were given about $150,000. Now, when I was paying attention to that, there was an episode of 60 Minutes that was aired, I forgot the year, but they talked about it. And in that, they interviewed a congressman for Tulsa, or one of the senators or something like that. And he felt that they didn't deserve it, that they shouldn't get it, that they should just get over it. Now, from me studying law, I understood what he was saying. It had nothing to do, and this is where we have to study and not be so emotional, honestly. Because what he was saying was that we can't give them reparations because it would set what would be considered a legal precedent, so we can't do it. Because if we give them reparations, when that precedent is set, it could be cited for all legal cases dealing with reparations. So you cannot give their descendants. Now pay attention. They gave people who were 90 years old $150,000, but gave no one who was a descendant anything. Because if you give a descendant the money, then it sets that legal precedent for all descendants of these Holocausts afflicted upon our people to come and get reparations and cite that legal case as the precedent to say that it's lawful. So you can't do that. So this is what their fight was really about, was not setting a legal precedent.
Wow. Tammy, I'm just here.
As I just told you, I feel like a kid in a candy store. And I don't really understand. I don't understand why, but that makes sense, which is why it's so important for us to know and talk to our children about who they are, where they came from, because so many of them feel like nothing because society, and we have as well, has allowed them to think you came straight from slavery. They were nobody then. The people that had you were nobody. Mm-hmm. You're nobody, and you will continue to be. So mm-hmm. I found an article that, and maybe you can kind of give some note on this because I'm sure the numbers have changed now, that Black Wall Street was known as the mini Beverly Hills, and that the dollar circulated 36 to 100 times, sometimes taking a year for the currency to leave the community. And now mm-hmm. a dollar leaves the Black community in 15 minutes, and that was in 2011, so I can't imagine what it is now. And that was, again, leaves the community within 15 minutes, and it took sometimes a year to leave the community back in.
No, those numbers.
So you can kind of tell me.
Yeah, no better. Only worse because again, we're stuck in a certain mind state, and that the resurrection of us out of that mind state is going to take us reorientating ourselves back to being ourselves. Right now, we suffer from a form of Stockholm syndrome, where we have totally assimilated ourselves into the mental mind state of our accosta. And so until we reorientate ourselves away from that and get back to being who we are, then it can't happen. And that's why, you know, you and Anthony become so important because you get the information out to change the vibration within the community. You know, we talk about, you know, reparations and we talk about all these things, but it is a fact. One of the things that happens when we get into how can we rebuild this thing and why is it that we haven't been able to get reparations? Well, there is no nation on this planet of Black people. There's no nation on this planet of African Americans, Negroes, or colored people. That nation doesn't exist. Nations do business with nations. So what happens when you call yourself a slave brand, Black, Negro, colored, African-American, and Indian, and they're letting the Indian slide, so we'll keep that out. But when you try to conduct business as a brand, then again, law doesn't apply to you. So in order for us to rebuild these structures, we have to go back to being ourselves ancestrally. We have to reclaim the heritage and the names and get the brands off of us. For instance, you look at a name, and I'm going to use all of us so that the audience can understand it. You look at a Tammy Gator, Anthony Collins, and an Andre Curry. Now, Curry is Irish. Collins, I'm not sure. You may know German, Dutch, whatever. Gator could be the same, whatever. None of us are our ancestors are Dutch, Irish, or any of those things. When you do business in those names, it's void initio, which means it doesn't exist from the beginning. Those names was put upon us in slavery to signify property. So when our ancestors was forced out of our ancestral names, they were given these names to signify whose plantation they was on and whose property they were. Mm-hmm. And we continue to do business and take pride in these names. I mean, one of the craziest things that we hear is how you hear some of our brothers and sisters who aren't educated or indoctrinated, either side of the fence that they're on, and they take pride in these Anglo-Saxon last names, these slave brands. Mm-hmm. I'm a Smith. I'm a Jones. I'm a Johnson. I'm the strong black man, without ever understanding what they're saying. Mm-hmm. Until you strip that off, and this is where, you know, as both of you know, that my actual Noas or name or title is Ramiel Eel Bay. And mm-hmm. I don't even deal with the slave brand or have that slave brand. The only reason it's still on Facebook is because I haven't changed it because of, mm-hmm. of me having so many people I went to school with to deal with that given name. But I don't even deal with that given name in my actual reality. My Newark mm-hmm. name is Ramiel Eel Bay because I've had mm-hmm. to strip that away to put myself back into the fold of nationhood and declare myself an aboriginal, autochthonous person to this land and put myself back into the fold of law.
Quick question, brother. For anybody who wants to do that as far as the name, well, how do they go about that?
Well,
changing the name.
There's the first thing you must do is study, and I'm going to give them the website. And the reason I start with that, and I know some people are looking for this quick information, I just want the paperwork. It doesn't work that way. We are under military
right.
occupation,
okay.
and you have to be able to defend your square. You have to be able to defend your honor and your ancestral honor, which means that you have to know the law. So the first thing I do is
mm-hmm.
give you a study guide so that you can study. So that if someone comes to you and they stop you inside and you're traveling in your motor conveyance or what you'll call a car, and they stop you and say, do you have a driver's license? Well, when you come back and say, I don't have that instrument because I don't need that instrument, you can defend your stance. If you go to court, you have to be able to defend your stance because they're going to say, well, who are you? They'll say, it's Andre Curry here. So I have to know what to say because they're going to keep trying to convince me to take on that brand. So I have to know how to say, for the record, on the record, let the record show that I, Ramiel Eel Bay, am here in full life, pro se, dealing with the fictitious corporate entity, Andre Armand Curry, in special appearance. I have to know how to say that to put
mm-hmm.
it on the record as to who I really am. And if you can't do that, you tie yourself up. So the
mm-hmm.
website that you can study from and actually get the information to reclaim your estate or your inheritance as a Moor is RV, as in Victor, Bay, B-E-Y, publication, R is in Robert, V is in Victor, Bay, B-E-Y, publication.com.
Mm-hmm.
Everything on that website, study. You can get in contact with the
mm-hmm.
brothers there on there, and all the information pertains to you and reclaiming our inheritance. Now,
mm-hmm.
why that becomes important is that there was a law that was signed. And this gets into the reparations, and it becomes interesting because I know we've all had these conversations with our brothers and sisters, and they talk about, well, we should get reparations, and we should get this, and we should, you know, get that. Why haven't they paid us? But not many people know that there's actually already an international law that says that you can get it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on the books. But you have to be...
Mm-hmm.
yourself in order to get it, because nations
mm-hmm.
do business with nations. So
mm-hmm.
once we go back to nationhood, which just means the same train of thought, we unite to
mm-hmm.
form your communities. For instance, you're in the territory of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
If you form a community of even two or three blocks of like-minded Moors, all declared your proper status and went back to being your proper selves, you can actually start what would be called a sovereign nation. A sovereign nation has to have a constitution.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the first thing that you guys would write. You get your constitution, and then you petition, you demand the reparations, and the law that is in place is called the Rights of Indigenous People. It came through the United Nations. And for all of those people who don't understand, you know, may not understand politics, so they get into this Obama is against or for the community, understand that Obama is the one who signed that in 2010 so that you can get your stuff back. And that's really the reason why they hate him, is because he signed that law. Bush wouldn't sign it. Clinton wouldn't sign it.
Please say that one more time. Could you please say that one more time?
You have a law called the Rights of Indigenous People. Rights of Indigenous People. It comes through the United Nations.
Mm.
It declares that any people who are Aboriginal, Indigenous, or Native to any land that is now under military occupation from foreigners, stop calling Anglo-Saxons Americans. The only American is defined in the 1828 Webster's Dictionary as the copper-colored natives, get a penny, put it on you, that were found here by the Europeans. That's the definition of an American, the copper-colored natives found here by the Europeans. Obama, in 2010, signed that document. President Bush wouldn't sign it. Clinton wouldn't sign it. No Anglo-Saxon or European country would sign it because they're not autochthonous or original anywhere on the planet. So everywhere they are invaders and foreigners. So that by with this law, they would have to give a lot of the land that they've stolen back. And he signed that. That's the reason why they hate him. This is the reason why he deals with so much of their wrath, is because of that law. So when we are stuck in this, oh, he's not for us thing, learn the law first, because we keep expecting Obama and the rest of these people to lay down on the railroad tracks and say, I'm black and I'm proud. But they're doing little things that you have to study and recognize for your freedom. But you have to be about your freedom as much as you expect them to be.
Mm-hmm.
We have to stop crying about what they're not doing for us and get up and do something for yourself. Stop saying that you're trying to make tomorrow better for your children and actually do something that makes it better for your children. Don't complain about the schools, but then when I ask you what is your child learning at school, you don't even know. Don't complain about a flu shot, and then when I say, well, what is in a flu shot that you gave your child, you don't even know what it is. Responsible
mm-hmm.
people don't do that. Responsible people actually know what they're shooting in their children's arms. Responsible people actually know what their children learn on a day-to-day basis. We're not responsible right now because we've been trained not to be. But we have to do something about it and stop trying to blame someone else. Educate ourselves. You have the website. You have the radio shows. Do something.
Mm-hmm.
Amy, are you going to give anything on the research or the laws, or do you all want to touch base on that tomorrow, first part? But I know you mentioned about how to do the proper research and then the laws that are in place now. Maybe that's what you were talking about a minute ago.
We can go in whatever direction because there's so much to talk about that, you know, the next 30 mm-hmm. minutes and 2 hours tomorrow is going to still leave a lot. So, you know, we have this time, we might as well take advantage of it so we can speak about some of the laws that are in place and how to actually, you know, dictate those and bring these situations to fruition and reality.
Okay. Well, we have, I don't know if you guys want to try to take a call or two, if we've kind of covered everything here, because the last question we're going to take, bring it into tomorrow's show. So do you all want to try to take
Yeah, I'm fine.
Why not?
I'll tell you what, let me just Okay, I think maybe. Okay, let me do this. I'm going to just for the sake, I'm going to go out for just a second. Anthony, if you want to just kind of carry on, okay?
Okay, you want to screen the call?
My call.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
Oh, okay. What I'm going
to
do is just basically I'm going to take. Okay, go ahead. Brother Kerry, I want to just take this opportunity to just thank you for taking the time, really, to share this information and coming back tomorrow. So a lot of times we take information like this for granted because I know that you diligently work hard as far as doing your research for yourself, but you also are willing to share it with others. So I appreciate you taking this time tonight to do that.
Hotel, brother, no problem. All we're doing is
hotel,
you know, following the commandments, you know, trying to raise following humanity, you know, getting ourselves back to our proper selves. What else could I be doing tonight that's that important?
Right, absolutely.
I'm back in, you guys.
Go ahead,
I couldn't get an answer from that person, so I was trying to pull in 713 with the last four of 9333. What you'll need to do now is select the number one to pull yourself out of queue and then select it again so that I'll know that you're back on. Just trying to monitor the calls for this type of show because sometimes we get, you know, get those people that we don't want on the show.
Right. Well, okay, if we have no other calls, we can just go into some of the laws then to kind of close out the show.
Okay. Sounds good to me. You have several different laws on the books, but the most important one is going to deal with, and I'll read it, it's Article 6 of the Constitution. And why that becomes important is because the Constitution is going to set the standard for everything that, you know, we're talking about. Let me see if I can go to it in here. Okay, it says, let's see. Okay, Article 6 of the Constitution deals with all the different treaties that have taken place and the debts that are within the government and how they are going to deal with us. And so we have several treaties that we've signed. One of the reasons that we don't find ourselves in history is because they change the words. Again, remember, as we showed earlier, is that the word Indian comes from the appearance of the people of Hindustan, or what you call India, which is the Dravidians, which were the first inhabitants of Hindustan. That the word Indian and India comes from the word indigo, which deals with the blackberry tree, connotatively using the word black. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, when you look at the Constitution, and you go back to the treaties, you see that there was a treaty called the Treaty of Peace and Friendship that came about in 1200. And that treaty was when we, the Moors, on this continent, were the first to acknowledge the Anglo-Saxon as independent from Great Britain.
Mm-hmm.
We signed that Treaty of Peace and Friendship that gave them permission to set up a sovereign government on this continent, and then after a certain amount of time, they actually were supposed to start paying us taxes and tribute to stay here. Now, I don't know if the audience got that, so I'm going to repeat that one more time. We signed a treaty with them called the Treaty of Peace and Friendship that recognized them as a sovereign government on this land. We allow them to use part of our land to set up their government and be independent from Great Britain.
Hmm.
As a part of that treaty, after a certain amount of time, and I don't want to say the years because I could be misspeaking, and I don't want to do that. But after a certain amount of time, they was actually supposed to start paying taxes to us. So instead of us paying taxes right now, you should be getting a check in the mail based on the Treaty of Peace and Friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And the Constitution mm-hmm. is actually what tells you that. So I'll read it. Article 6 of the U.S. Constitution, it says, "This Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby." So in that verse, it tells you that any treaty that is signed or was signed is the supreme law of the land.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, when you go and you look up the treaties that were imposed upon us on this continent, the Choctaw, Pawnee, Washita, Seminole, so on and so forth, those treaties are still binding based on the Constitution. Now, mm-hmm. a lot of brothers are going to say, well, that's their law, blah, blah, blah. That's not their law. You taught them law. You brought mm-hmm. the European out of the Dark Ages. They just don't teach you.
No doubt.
You taught them math, science, geometry, cosmology, mm-hmm. astrology, all of that. All mm-hmm. of those sciences, you taught them law. When you get into the even the Constitution that we're reading out of, the Constitution comes from what's called the Great Law of Peace
mm-hmm.
that lasted over 200 years on this continent prior to the European. This was a treaty that we had amongst all of our tribes to stop us from fighting each other, and it lasted for 200 years. When the Anglo-Saxon could not write his own laws because they kept falling apart, he summoned us to come in and help. This is why when you see pictures of the signing of the Constitution, you always see a so-called Indian in the background laying low, chilling.
Mm.
But no one ever questions who that person is. And even and to get back to how things went for the women, truth be told, we're matriarchal. This patriarchal mindset comes out of us following false idol gods of Europe. The The Supreme Court is
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I already know you know. But the Supreme Court that we know of today comes from our great circle of women. So in our ancient societies, the people who settled all matters in the communities for the nations was the women. Before you went to war, you had to get her permission to go to war. Why? Why would you do that? It's her son going. Why would you not get her permission to go send her son to war?
Mm-hmm.
So when you and it's interesting because they show this in the movie, and I think on Tammy's show we talked about this before, the movie Avatar. If you go back and you watch that scene, and I remember I almost fell out of my chair when I was watching it, and it happened. The warrior king, the father, came out and was talking. But if you go back and you watch the movie, they was talking about not wanting this, the Anglo-Saxon in and blah, blah, blah. But when the queen walked out, they all fell to a hush. And the decision went to her. And even her husband bowed down and was quiet. Because, like and I just did a lecture, a seminar last weekend. And like I told them, when you want to hear the prophecies from God, call your mother, call your daughter, call your sister, because that is the person who is the closest principle of creation on this planet.
Period.
And they showed it in that movie. Again, this is about getting back to us being ourselves. And every nation on this planet knows who we are besides us.
Yep.
This is why they don't win. So I don't get too far off course. You know, I'll go on a tangent with this one, you know.
Right. Yeah, I'm right. Go ahead, bro.
When we start getting into these laws, the laws are set up for nations. You can't do business in the name of property. Mm-hmm. And we keep doing that. Until you are willing to say, I'm not your property anymore, and go back to being yourself, you will never get anything that the law says you have coming. You may get little trinkets, but you won't get the full thing. At any time someone comes singularly who has the knowledge and tries to get it, usually those people are taken out. You look at El-Haj Malik Shabazz, or who people commonly call Malcolm X. His national name was El-Haj Malik Shabazz because he nationalized.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason he was taken out is because he was going and to the United Nations and bringing charges upon the U.S. for genocide. Genocide is not mm-hmm. in the jurisdiction of the courts here. That's an international matter because there's international laws that deal with genocide. Our brother Johnny Cochran was doing the exact same thing when they infested him with cancer. Anybody who knows mm-hmm. Johnny Cochran will tell you that Johnny Cochran used to jog about 5 or 10 miles a day.
Yep.
All of a sudden he turns up with cancer. You see what I'm saying? Even Martin Luther King, who was a 33rd degree Mason, when he kept saying, I have been to the mountaintop, it's because he had seen the truth of what was happening to his people. Mm-hmm. And that's why he said, I've been to the mountaintop. I may not get there with you. Because he knew that once you start revealing these Masonic secrets, then mm-hmm. they were going to take him out. That's why even if you look mm-hmm. at some of his last video, you see that him and Malcolm were bridging that gap. And even Martin said that I was rethinking his position and said that I don't know if it's wise for me to keep trying to get my people accepted into a burning house.
Yep.
Mm.
Yep.
Wow.
They was about to unite. A lot of people don't even realize that Martin and Malcolm was about to unite, brother.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yep.
They don't realize that. They always tried to keep them as enemies, but they mm-hmm. were coming closer and closer together, and that's why they had to go, because as that happened, we probably would not be in the state that we are today. So there's a lot
would
of people
be.
Need to, you know that.
Right. Would
not absolutely.
Would not be.
You guys, do we have a time for a quick call? We do have another caller in.
Yeah, we got a quick call. Yeah, so we pretty much wrapping up as far as today's session. Yeah.
What we'll do, and I'm going to pull you in from the 508 area code, last 4-4-5-7-6. Holly, you're on the air with us.
Hello?
Hi, how are you?
Fine. Well, this is Michael calling.
Oh, how you doing, Michael?
How are we doing?
I was calling listening,
not to even take us further off in the other direction, but I keep thinking when you're bringing up supremacy clause for the Constitution, or at least the sixth article of the Constitution, and we're having a conversation from before, and not just about Black Wall Street, but about more specifically, were there ever any attempts to rebuild that in those communities? And how also assuming those names, those identities, assuming names such as Black, are assuming other terms had those ramifications that most of us don't even know about our own history and our past, and how we connect back to Tulsa. So you can speak a bit more though on here's a part for me that where I'm still, and maybe this will carry on until tomorrow, but. What do you have to say to all of those, at least the canon in the Black community, but also all of those that assume other cultures, same thing with identities such as Chicano, where the claim is that in this past, at least the 20th century, when we look at not just Darwinism and look at Ella Baker, but even look for Chicanos like Ruben Salazar and Reyes Terina, would say that we assume those names. We assume those names to bring us closer back to our land. Like Ella Baker would say that they try to use our culture as a way to divide us. And we take this, we take up arm to bind us back together to the motherland, which is why you assume the name of black. Same with Chicano, said that the term Chicano, we look at those scholars just from, like Ruben Salazar will say that Chicano gives us, is our identity, our name, for us that want to say that we are indeed American, but not assuming, but in a non-Anglo image.
Okay.
That we're taking that these cultures, not just black, but also Chicano, claim that they're taking up cultural unity and entrepreneurship and bringing back an enterprise by reunifying their cultures back together.
Okay.
There's a lot you can go on that one, but I was going to ask if you could at least broach that.
Yes. Before I answer that, I wanted to recognize Michael for a second, because as he started to speak, it came to me who he was. I didn't catch it in the beginning. Michael was a teacher out of San Francisco, and I always applaud Michael because Michael is really trying to do something for these babies. He actually instituted some programs at his school out here, and the programs were going great and had some interference. But one of the most outstanding things that I've seen about Michael is that Michael never gives up. He continues to keep trying. He's actually in his early 20s, but already got accepted to have to come to Princeton at one point to teach a studies class. And I can't remember exactly what the studies class was, but for a person who's 26, 25, or somewhere around there, to be asked to come to Princeton to teach, you know, to me really speaks to his abilities and the way he's trying to give back to the kids. I just always applaud that and appreciate him for doing that, those things. Mm-hmm. To answer your question, based on law, or let me go back, we are under military occupation.
Right.
When you're under military occupation, there's a certain a bunch of rigid guidelines that you have to follow to raise yourself up, meaning that your people have an ancestral name. You have one choice, to either identify yourself with that ancestral name, because that ancestral name is tied to heritage. Black, Chicano, Negro, colored,
right,
is tied to nothing. You cannot find a place called Chicano land, Negro land. There's not a plot of land on this planet called Chicano land. That's not to strip my brothers and sisters from their heritage. It's to say that their heritage is not Chicano. The heritage is Moor. They are Moor. Mm-hmm. They are Asiatic. And these things become divisive because you have Chicanos or Mexicans, so-called whatever, they'll look at you and then they'll say that you're not the same, because we've bought into this structure of names that are not properly ours. And so you'll go and look at a Chicano and they'll look at a Puerto Rican, which is just the craziest thing. They'll be like, I ain't Mexican. I Puerto Rican, identical people, slightly
right.
different in a couple of characteristics, but the law says what the law says. The law says that you have to be a part of a nation. That's the law. That's not up to contradiction. I mean, excuse me, a debate, because you are what your mother was, without contradiction. Whatever your mother is, you are. And when you go through read all annals of law, the child's status at law is always a derivative of the mother. So if the mother was free, the child was free. If the mother was a prisoner, the child was a prisoner. And so you tie yourself back to your mother. So when you go to Chicano, it's only going to go back to a few years to the person who invented it. Now, if they would have said that Xi, which is X, you know, XI, which is who you get that's called the Almacs or the Z or Xi people, okay, then they got a heritage that goes back 40,000 years, 50,000, 60,000 mm-hmm. years. That's indigenous and autochthonous to the continent. And that's a lost act. So we have to be careful because a lot of us get so caught up in this wanting to reattach ourselves to our culture, i.e. African-American, i.e. black movement, you know, that we lose our status in law. There's no such thing as civil rights. You don't see Chinese people when they fight for civil rights. They fight for Chinese rights.
Can I push just one small part further on that one? Because I want to.
Yeah.
Well, so here's the interesting thing for me, and just because my background is just on the more quantitative side, specifically, my work is mainly I teach on mathematics and civil rights, so the meaning and importance of math to the black community and progressing it further. The interesting thing for me is when we look at these names that these cultures really pushed to assume in the late 20th century, it's not just that we stripped ourselves of certain rights by choosing black or choosing Chicano, but you look at the actual canons, when you look at writings and works for, Ministry of Information for the Black Panther by Ella Baker, you see that black was specifically chosen not just to bring back to motherland, but also to rid our name of a specific American or Anglo identity. And it's the same thing for the word Chicano. It's not just to distance yourself from the word Mexican-American, but you look to your Hispanic right activists like Salazar would say, Chicano, the only meaning we know it has is mean not Mexico, neither America. It specifically want to be identified in a non-Anglo way. So what I'm curious on, why these cultures specifically, knowing that we the rights and the repercussions for it, not only do we try to bring our root ourselves back in our heritage, but we chose names that distance us from this land and legally, specifically trying to reflect being not American.
Because you don't know your heritage. You see what I'm saying? Well, you don't know. When you don't know who you really are, then you grasp at straws. So I'm going to invent something that I think ties me back to my heritage without knowing that I'm really distancing myself. I'm trying to do the right thing, but I don't know what the right thing is. I'm going to try it and see what it gets. But we don't realize that we're in such a structure of law. Law is specific. It's very, very specific. If you don't understand how specific it is, then you can get caught up and tangled in the web, and that's what's happened to us. I mean, literally. I mean, and it's funny how it happens, but when people know, for instance, when countries want to get away from the United States and from the Anglo-European military encampments and so on and so forth. When they want to get away from it, what do? They nationalize.
Right.
That's what they do. You look at Argentina, you look at Venezuela, you look at Cuba, all they did was nationalize. Nationalization makes you sovereign. Once you're sovereign, no one can tell you what to do who's not a part of your government. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't nationalize if you don't have any land.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't. There's nothing to nationalize.
Mm-hmm.
So your land is your heritage. And that's why your name has to denote your land. And your land is tied to your inheritance. Key word in there is her. Her. In her, I tend. Inheritance. When you tie, and that's why you tie it back to your mother, whatever your mother is,
you are without contradiction, period.
Right.
And if any name you give yourself does not denote her, then it is void initio in law, void from the beginning, because it does not exist. And that's what happens with Chicano or any of that stuff. Black, Negro, color is void initio from the beginning, period. They will play the game with you. They'll play the Negro game with you. Don't get it twisted. They will play it.
Right.
Because all you're doing is paying their bills. So they're playing with you, no problem.
Okay. Right. So I know you have to close out. I guess the question that'll linger on, I'll probably pick up tomorrow, is that when we look at those people that really took the wheel for each of these movements, we look at the Stokely Carmichaels, the Ella Bakers, we look at the Bobby Seals and Huey Newtons, we look at the Salazars, we look at the Cesar Chavez, we look at the Hannahs, where did they go wrong that you would go differently with these movements?
We definitely can, and Brother Mike, I appreciate if you would call back and revisit that question for us. I'm pretty sure we won't forget it, but we still want you to come back to ask that question again. And we may even start at that very point, because again, that's kind of like part of the solution part.
Right.
Because as a matter of fact, what we'll do tomorrow, just so you know, Brother Andre, maybe like about the 9:30 mark, we just going to have to cut the information part off, because I want to just start working on some solutions that we can try to do from that point. I also want to mention some information that I got about trying to start, you know, our own credit unions and how important it is for us to start depositing our checks into those credit unions, because that gives us the capital to underwrite some of these loans. So, you know, we need to talk about things of that nature as well. But, brother, again, I thank you. I'm sure Tammy feels the same way. We've been working on this show for probably like 3 months based on our schedules and stuff like that, but we finally hashed it in, and we want everybody to be sure to tune in tomorrow to the Butterfly Evolution Show, the Anthony and B-Fly Show. We thank you for being patient with us in the sense that we didn't take the normal amount of calls that we normally do, but to me it's more important about the information, and again, lastly, about the solution that we'll talk about more tomorrow. So, Hotel Brother, and Tammy, good evening.
I just want to ask everybody that's still listening on with us, particularly if you have Facebook, share the event for tomorrow. You can get it off of my page or Anthony's or Andre's. So if you don't mind, share it on your timeline as well. Invite people to tune in tomorrow.
Please. Yeah, please do.
Okay.
All right, we'll end it there. All right, we'll see everybody tomorrow. Y'all have a great evening.
Thanks, everyone.
Peace.